Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then, like, an earthquake, the classic, like, cartoon crack, like, rips the ground asunder, but it's, like, in his, like, root garden, so you've got all these potatoes just, like, falling down into this chasm and, like, falling straight out of the dirt.
Four boys here and now. In the present, with you. But also, not technically not now. We're here yesterday. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, here to talk to you guys about Fable lore. This week's episode of the number one fake history podcast, brought to you by Lionshead Studios. And
R.I.P.
With me, of course, is...
Peter O'Donoghue.
Sorry.
And, you had Peter, a little Peter. Steve moment there for a second.
I had a little Steve Brule moment. Could flound me.
I got Xbox at home. I play Frable.
And of course, joining us, the third member of the Lore Boys triumvirate.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm happy to be here. I gotta go now. No, I gotta go. Okay, it was nice to see you guys, but I can't do the episode, so I gotta go.
Oh, okay, Jamie. I guess.
Okay, Jamie, whatever you want.
Oh wow, he came. He came as quickly as he went. You know what I mean? I hate to see him leave, but I love to watch him go. That's what I've always said about Jamie. So, yeah, it's going to end up being an Ethan and Peter episode today. So if you're a fan of Jamie and Jamie alone, then buckle up, because you can get only a little bit of him. And that's the
we got other episodes that he's probably on. I don't listen to it anymore. Because I usually write down the jokes. So I'd assume Jamie's on some of the older episodes. I can't really tell you.
Yeah, I have like a mental block for when Jamie speaks to or when I hear his voice on a podcast, so I wouldn't be able to tell you either.
One thing I can tell you is that I didn't have the time to write the Christmas episode before Christmas, so I'm sorry, we'll get to that as soon as we can.
Christmas. Yeah, we're adults, we're busy. Get off my back, Mom.
Yeah, you had a baby, needed some cover here and there, and then of course I had to...
Yeah. I think if it comes out around the holidays, it's fine. So, yeah, enjoy that when it comes out.
No, there's like Orthodox New Year on January 6th or something like that. I can't really remember. We can
New
use
Year's
something.
In July.
Orthodox Christmas in July. It's just like, oh boy, you can get a hard boiled egg. Yeah, like with the taxes paid by the retailer. Yeah.
Or you can get some Ajaruli Kachapuri. Yeah.
Oh yes.
If you want to know what the fuck I'm talking about with that, then you have to become a patron. That's going to be discussed in tomorrow's bonus content. So for our patrons of the show, patreon.com/theloreboys, we offer bonus audio. We got like, a million hours or something now. Jamie's usually the one to have that stat. But no, I think seriously we have like
probably 21 hours of it. I think there's like 40 episodes, or usually like 30, 35 minutes.
Yeah, so I think we're getting close to, we're probably over 20 hours. Of extra content, some of which is us discussing Georgian egg bread. Okay.
Yeah.
you'll also get access to scripts. We like to say you get priority in requests. So this week's episode, the first user to request it was DumbleDix96. The first patron to request it was Bobbledob. So sorry, DumbleDix, but Bobbledob is going to get the W on you here. Get the credit for requesting it, only because they're a patron, of course. I mean, also David Last Name Withheld, Commodore Turtle, Chaz Michael Michaels, Warboy Lily, G.I. Jerk, Foresheet. There's like 10 others, including, you know, a special mention for Hype Man Handolo, who've requested Fable Lore at this point. So,
Honk Honk.
Yeah, it might be one of our most requested, like, single series episodes, maybe. And I hope I do it justice. We're going to do a bit of, like, prehistory to the games, I guess, which is covered in some of the games, but a lot of it is going to come from something else, which I'll get to in a little bit. Pete, I know Jamie, unfortunately, he did have to go, as we saw by watching his butt leave the room. I know he's played some Fable, I think the first one primarily. I've only ever played the first one and the Lost Chapters, the DLC for the first one, or the expansion, back when they were called expansion packs, not DLC, the expansion pack for the first one, on the original Xbox, I want to say. Could have been Xbox 360, though. I can't remember such things. What's your experience with the Fable series?
I was a Fable cuck when I was a kid. I have watched probably every single one of my male friends who had an Xbox play Fable 1. I never had an Xbox growing up, so I have never played Fable 1. But damn. I have watched it. I have seen the beginning 1,000 times where you're like the kid and your village is massacred.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like the first time I saw someone puke in a video game, but of course he's like 2D face and he just throws up on the ground. And then I've seen like whatever, Gone Home and the following Saturday, like go back over to Kyle's place and all of a sudden he is either an angel or a devil. And I'm like, cool, I have no idea what the fuck happened in the middle there.
Okay, that's...
Fable 2 and 3, because I had a 360. So I did play Fable 2 and 3. I liked 2 a lot. 3 was fine, if I recall.
Okay, so we've got, between us, we're covering all the bases. There's going to be plenty of opportunities for listeners at home to be like, that's like a reference, or you guys can shout at your listening device whenever you catch a clue to something that's going to be coming up, but... Yeah. I haven't played 2 or 3, like I said. So between us, we've got everything covered. I had seen people play 2. Say my cousin had Fable 2, I think. Fable 2 or Fable 3, I can't remember which. But he had one of them, and I'd watch him play. Again, just like the intro sequence. I'd watch him play, and then I would like play through the intro sequence at his place. But then like obviously my save slot, because save slots used to be a thing. My save slot was never like maintained, right? So like they were always like overwriting the third save slot for my new game plus or whatever. So never played 2 or 3, but have played 1. So the games, if we jump into the, I guess we talk about the lore a little bit, huh?
Quick anecdote. I do know a girl who used to work at Lionhead Studios, who I don't work with on the show I'm on now, but worked with briefly on the show before this. She's a technical animator, so like cloth and hair and stuff. Okay. She worked at Lionhead long enough to get laid off when they shut down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's, there was like some stuff going on at work, and she's like, oh, I remember the last time I was laid off. I was like, what? She's like, I used to work at Lionhead. Yeah, but like, holy fuck, really? It's just like, yeah, rumors, and then everybody loses their job 2 days later. I was like, Jesus Christ. Cool. And now she's working on movies, so.
Cool and chill, and about to get laid off.
Yeah. On her way to her next layoff, baby.
Okay, so the game takes place, or the games take place in a fictional country called Albion.
Right.
There's like 1 or 2 locations, which we're not going to get into, outside of Albion, which are ever even like referenced, really, which are like, oh, this is like a colony, essentially, because Albion. Peter, do you know what Albion is in the real world?
It's probably England.
It's Great Britain. Yeah, is Albion, which I think is England and Wales and maybe Scotland. So Albion is like a catch-all term for Great Britain. Obviously, the game's creator, Peter Molyneux, is British.
Notoriously, you know, British, yeah.
Yeah, Lionhead is in the UK, was a British studio as well. So a lot of the art and villages and, you know, like Bowerstone Keep and all that stuff, like it's all very like British setting and British inspired, I think, in a lot of ways.
Too bad. Hang on a second. I'm looking up the etymology for Albion. It is a catch-all. It is like an alternative name for Great Britain, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But Canada almost got New Albion or Albionoria, which is Albion of the North. I would have way preferred that. That's awesome.
Albionoria is pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is pretty cool.
But I'd be a elf.
You'd be a elf. Yeah. So a lot of our lore today is going to come out of, and when I say a lot of, I mean like 90% of the lore today, comes out of a canon story or some canon stories. They're like canon journal entries, which were once uploaded to Lionhead Studios' website. The series was called Tales of Albion. That site was removed in 2010. I couldn't find like legit archives of it. I could just find the copy uploaded to the fandom wiki. So, you know, and they're just like, like that's like the last source at this point. Those aren't like reference sheets or whatever. So I'm, you know, operating on some faith that this is accurate, but it seems pretty legit. So
Yeah, we weren't on the forums in 2009 to prep for this episode, and I'm sorry if we get something wrong.
Yeah, I was maybe on the forums in 2009 because I like to spend time on gaming forums and particularly ones with like Rich Story, but I don't think I was ever on the Fable forums. I was a right. big fan of the Pendragon unofficial fan forums. That's where I cut my teeth with forums as a kid. So our lore is going to start not in Albion. Instead, we're gonna start with a fantasy classic. Pete, do you want to guess where we're gonna start? Void.
Yeah, I was gonna say a magical island that nobody's ever been to that people just materialize from. But okay, the Void would have been, you know, somewhere on that list. Yeah, all right. Exactly. Take a drink.
Somewhere in the top five. Yeah. So yeah. The Void. I love that the wiki / Tales of Albion clarified that the Void was outside of Albion and likely didn't exist in the world at all. Like, yeah, it's probably another dimension. Like, I don't know. I think that's what the writers had intended you to get from the
name. They just couldn't think of like an old timey name for France or like
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's and they came from the Void. You mean down past Daggersford?
Daggersfordshire on the Mimms, of course. Yeah, I've been there.
So very, very, very little is known about the Void. I don't know. I couldn't find any instances in my research on the prehistory of like actually going there in the games, but I'm pretty sure you do once or twice, at least in cutscenes. But like it's not like a playable zone in the game or anything like that. The only thing that we know for sure about the Void is that the court, with a capital C, originally lived there. So the court is simply a trio of powerful beings which came from the Void at an unknown time in the past to enslave the men of Albion. So at this point, there's somebody yelling at their podcast device who's played Fable 1, who knows who came from the Void. But Pete, since you haven't played Fable 1, you may not know the Knight of Blades. Or you probably don't know the Knight of Blades. You may not know
Jack of Blades.
Yeah, so yeah. Jack of Blades comes from here, and the Queen of Blades also comes from here. So
okay.
Jack of Blades, main antagonist in Fable and Fable Lost Chapters. He's the big bad in the first game, essentially.
Quick shout out to any of our creative writers who may be listening here. Don't call wherever your stuff comes from the Void. If you're starting now, you're way past using that. So think of something else.
It's also like, it wasn't Void. There was three people there.
Yeah.
You should have called it the place where there's three people and nothing else, right? Like, it's not Void.
that rolls off the tongue. It's like, that's the source of all magic.
The almost Void. That is not the source of all magic. We will get to where the source of all magic is. Okay, so I have an excerpt for you from the Tales of Albion. You ready?
Yeah.
Legend has it...
Oh, wait, no.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. What were we going to say?
Okay, now go.
Legend has it that, when the world was young, Albion was a peaceful land full of tranquility and beauty. Then three came from the Void, the Knight, the Queen, and the Jack of Blades. They coveted Albion and demanded that all men bow down before them. When the people refused, the court burned Albion until the earth turned black and the sky was thick with smoke. Then the court demanded obedience again, only to be refused a second time. This time the court lifted the sea into the sky and flooded the world. A third time the court demanded that men worship them, promising peace and an end to the misery. Those who survived still refused. So the court twisted their minds until brother slew brother, parents abandoned their children, and friend turned against friend. Finally, the people of Albion bowed to the court. They and their descendants toiled to raise monuments to those who came from the Void.
Okay.
So they're chill. They're like pretty cool and chill people. These like the court, you know, British studio making a game that's clearly set in like fantasy Britain with some pretty strong characters based on monarchy figures, right?
Yeah, but also it's also kind of like, because obviously the British Isles had been invaded by like the Saxons and the Vikings and a bunch of other, like the original inhabitants of the Queen of England, she's dead. The King of England is German, for Christ's sake, right? Like even the guy in charge isn't a local. So that place has changed hands a few times.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. his mom and her cousin, his father, were both German, right? Or
yeah, so basically, the court shows up, these three figures. They demand, like, bow down to us, we're your rulers now. And the people are like, nah, fuck that. So they, like, wildfires, you know, the sky turns black with smoke, and they're still like, nah, it's not such a big deal. Then they literally, like, flood entire regions of the continent, and they're still like, no. And then they end up, like, twisting their minds and, like, causing, you know, civil wars, I guess, or just wars between people, like, making people, like, irrationally angry and violent.
Yeah, they just introduced soccer. They were just like, the plagues didn't do it.
Yeah, first they try wildfires, and the people of Britain's like, oh, it's kind of a nice hot summer, honestly. They try flooding.
It's finally
the place. Dry. Yeah, finally flood the place. They're like, well, I guess you know, we have been pretty hot, so it's kind of nice to cool down. And then finally soccer. Soccer's what.
Yeah, they introduce football clubs, which turns brother against brother.
Yeah. Yeah. So not cool guys, I guess, is the important thing. Like I said before, Jack of Blades is the main antagonist of Fable and Fable of the Lost Chapters. Knight of Blades and Queen of Blades both seem to be unseen in the games. You only ever meet Jack of Blades, as far as I know. Okay. And we'll get into what happened to them too. But
I can't even remember the villain of the second game. I think it's some like rival count or something who has a time machine or some shit. I haven't played in like over a decade. But yeah.
So the second game features something called the Tattered Spire, which I think is like an important place that you go. So it might not be a time machine, but it might be something like a wish machine. But I don't know for sure. I haven't played the games, and I didn't look up like the story of the games. I was just kind of going through the prehistory and like to set up the games. So we're gonna basically stop right when like Fable 1 starts, okay, essentially. Yeah. So
Cool. You couldn't die in Fable 2 and 3, but you'd get knocked out, lose all the experience you were carrying, and then your character would get like a new permanent scar. Because I know, like, your characters would change a lot. Like, obviously, because, like, I would watch Kyle play, and he is little boy with wooden sword, and then angel or demon by the end of it. Like, those games were big on the character transformation, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say it was the first game to implement, like, a morality system, because it definitely wasn't. But, like, that was, like, Peter Molyneux's vision for, like, a lot of things, right? Was to make it, like, a real life, or make it have consequences that, like, last, make your decisions matter, was kind of his methodology with video games, his philosophy. And, like, Fable 1 was the same way, too, for sure. But, like, really lean into that. I mean, we haven't... I guess we haven't talked about like how the actual games like look, but they're RPGs, you know, they're open-ish world RPGs. I guess kind of linear.
They're like little hub worlds. Like you can't stray too far from the path, because like there's invisible walls on the forest, if I recall. But like there's side quests and shit like that. It's an Xbox RPG, right? Like
exactly. So. Yeah. So yeah. There's this morality system. There's like you can gain weight or lose weight. Like there's these things called demon doors, which I actually didn't touch at all in this episode. So if I ever do another Fable episode, we'll talk about demon doors and their creation, I think. But like the demon doors are essentially like usually you have to solve a riddle or it's like a riddle or a puzzle or like just a social interaction or something like that where you have to pass their test and they'll allow you entrance, and then there's usually like a treasure behind them, essentially, right? So like one of them is like, oh, I really want to see like a really really fat person. You just have to go out and just like eat cheeseburgers until you get your character gets like fatter, and then you can come back and he'll open for you. A lot of them are like,
I'm having all these fucking memories now, like Fable 2, my character was a fat guy with a gun.
Yeah, the guns were introduced in Fable 2. Yeah, it was
they were pretty neat.
Yeah. And like some of them is like, oh, you have to shoot the door with a bow and arrow from a certain distance. And it's usually like cryptic, like riddles that they're giving you for this stuff, but not always.
Right.
Yeah. So, we have Jack of Blades as the main antagonist. We have, Knight of Blades, Queen of Blades, also just kind of ruling over Albion at this point and being like shitty rulers, right? They're willing to go to those lengths to force people to swear fealty to them. Probably makes sense that they're not like great rulers. It's a time unknown that this happens for. Like, it could be 2 days, could be 10 years, could be 100 years.
Yeah.
Could Give it.
Shitty rulers by having people swear fealty to them. They didn't like a mysterious black ships didn't arrive from the void and like healthcare, and everybody's like, no, flood us.
Yeah. Well, I'm not paying for it with my taxes, okay?
Midwestern accent for everybody in like fake Britain.
Yeah. They're ruling for a time until one day a boy is born in an unassuming blacksmith's home. This boy, William Black, would turn out to be a pretty important dude. So the first thing recorded in the history books about William is how one day his village came under attack and he single-handedly defended it. That would be impressive enough, but even more remarkable is that he did it all with his mind. So William Black had invented magic.
Just out of nowhere?
Yeah, we don't know how he did it. We don't know why he was given the ability to. In Albion, magic is known as will or willpower, which, like, great pun, I guess, that William Black invented willpower.
Oh, that didn't even occur to me.
I had to write it out so many times in this episode. I could not have missed it in the script, but I don't know if that was intentional, but I'm going to assume the worst and guess that it was. So there's no consensus, it seems, on how will works. It could be a couple things. Most people believe that, most people in canon, I should say, believe that it was a trait of his blood that allowed William to control reality in this way, like just a genetic defect, a once-off, like he was just born special. There doesn't seem to be like a huge presence of the gods in this world. There's two gods who you meet in the first game, and I think the subsequent games too, called Eivo and Skorm. But we'll get into them a bit later. Like, magic definitely did not come from the gods, essentially.
Okay. I guess he's kind of just like a Jedi, right?
He
was born with the bugs in his blood, and now he can control
fantasy midichlorians, if you will.
Okay.
So it means that every will user, if it is a defect of his blood, it means that every will user, including like the hero, capital H from the games, is related to William Black somehow. Like they're a descendant of him somehow because they share some like that genetic trait of his blood, right?
It couldn't spontaneously happen twice.
I mean, what are the chances?
I know, yeah. Two gingers in Albion? I don't fucking think so.
Well, all gingers share a common ancestor. Right.
Yeah.
missing link.
The ginger with the Habsburg jaw.
Just like a hunched over ginger man, like freckled with like curly orange hair between a couple of monkeys, like on like an evolutionary diagram.
Yeah, they're gonna find like one of those like Otzi the Iceman, you know, like that caveman body they found in Siberia. They're gonna find like a ginger in a peat bog somewhere in Scotland.
So William was obsessed, as any good hero would be, with unyoking the people of Albion from their cruel masters and was working tirelessly to find a loophole in the legal system that could abolish the monarchy. He was, however, during this time, making a name for himself and drawing some undue attention by, you know, using just his thoughts to manipulate the very fabric of reality, right? Like it's gonna garner some attention, especially from these like extra planar beings that can control the weather who've come from another dimension to enslave
from
your
France.
People from France, the extra dimensional plane of France. So one night William is reading this mysterious tome when he is ripped from his home and brought to the void. I couldn't figure out what tome it was that he was reading. If there might be somebody yelling at their podcast listening device right now saying like, oh, it's definitely this thing. Let us know, I guess, if you know what it is. So he's brought to the void. On a throne surrounded by ghastly figures sits Jack of Blades, clearly unhappy with, you know, this guy's pending rebellion, usurpation, whatever you want to call it, right?
Boy, you're right, magic cunt. And you've got to stop.
Knock it off, Oh, come on, William. We're all just having a bit of a laugh up here. No need to be chazzed, mate. So Jack,
you stop manipulating the weather. Simple as. All right.
So Jack hefts this ornate sword he was known to wield, and tries to use its power to enslave William utterly, but just like really biffs it, like like really bungles it up. Like a real boner here, okay?
Okay.
So all we have is that he lifts his sword and tries to enslave William, and then William gets the sword from Jack while he was trying to enslave the son of a blacksmith, and he escapes the void. So that's, I mean, it is very like, the Tales of Albion is like not a prose narrative. Like it's not very descriptive or anything like that. It's very much just like journal entries by like an omniscient observer, if anything, or like a historian maybe. So it's literally just like Jack has this ornate sword, which we'll come to know is the Sword of Aeons, a very important sword in the first game. And I mean the lore of Albion in general, because it's just like it's the most powerful fantasy sword, right?
Right.
Jack has it. He's like an extraplanar Frenchman, and he hefts it. And William's just like, "Oh, I think I'll be having that. I think I'll be taking that." And just rips it off him and then leaves. Just like, "All right, then. Oh, I'll be off. I better be off then."
Thanks.
Thanks, mate. You really done me a solid with this one. And
bring it back, yeah.
Oh, terrible, you're back.
Oh no, I drop my Aeon sword.
Oh,
and now the Englishman have it.
Oh, you drop it right in front of my feet. You're a right idiot, aren't you, mate?
Of course, he's like monstrously obese with his like soccer jersey, he can't cover his gut. Right?
Just gotta bend down, pick it up then. Oh, look at you, stupid fat Englishman. Can't even bend out to pick up my sword of Aeons, which I dropped on the ground. If it wasn't for my government-mandated 30-minute break, I'd be picking it up myself, I'm on my smoke break.
Like so many strikes in the void.
Yeah.
This is France. I'd love to think he's got this big, fat, like, Englishman walking into getting pulled into the void, and like the ghastly figures he describes are just like French women. It's just
Oh, Jackie, who is it?
Oh, don't worry, my dear, it's just some stupid man from Albion.
Mon amour de couteau, qu'est-ce que tu fais?
So William gets back to Albion. The sword speaks to him. Cool. Calls itself the Sword of Aeons. Cool. It tells Willy that it can help him defeat the court and take back Albion if only William will enslave his own soul to the sword. So it's basically like, cool, you want to, you know, break your fealty to the court? Swear fealty to me.
Swear to me!
The sword's Batman, I guess, in this. The sword's American in this.
Okay. okay, well, we're losing the plot here. We've got the external dimension of France, this... Northern football club man, and now his Batman sword, right?
Yeah, and sentient objects, the Americans.
Very okay. Yeah.
So William takes one for the team, swears fealty to the Sword of Aeons, and they set off to find the court in Albion.
Okay.
William scales the highest peak in the lands, Mount Ruon, and challenges the court to combat. Just generally like gets up there and goes like, yo, let's fucking fight. And I guess they show up. The Knight of Blades was the first to appear, was quickly defeated by William and the Sword of Aeons.
He has his blade, doesn't he?
He's got, yeah, Knight of Blades. Blades was my only weakness.
remember this.
Yeah.
Who told him to bring a sword to our sword fight? Was it Jackie? Did he tell you to do this? Me, the Chevalier? I don't know how to stop you when you have a sword. I only brought my cigarettes and a nice toasty French baguette.
Yeah, it was probably like croissant butter, which is why it like slipped out of his hands the original time. It's just flaky pastries.
I brought it up to the top of the mountain to let the butter soften a little before I enjoy it with my nice glass of morning wine. You understand? What are you doing with that sword?
Yeah, obviously the Knight of Blades only works from like 11 to 3, and that's it.
So next is Jack of Blades to appear. His body is broken, and his soul is cast back into the void where it could not reform, at least not at first. There's like a great line from the Tales of Albion, which is like, and no one knows, like, you know, what happened to his body, if he was ever truly killed. But this was put up like years after Fable 1 came out. So we know that for sure not. He does come back. He's the main antagonist of the first game. And
no one knows if he was the final boss further in history.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, the Queen of Blades appeared, the greatest power of the court, and their battle raged for weeks, where it would reshape the topography of Albion. It levels mountains, carves new valleys where the blows are landing, basically. So this is like the real like anime final fight, which spans three episodes, essentially, right?
Okay, yeah. It's the episode of One Punch Man where Will is like cratered into the moon and jumps back to Earth with the Sword of Aeons, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's if this is DBZ, then William is Frieza. And William's like just wrecking house, and like he kills Piccolo, you know, and then he takes Vegeta and just like throws him off the planet. All this time, Goku's charging his spirit bomb, right?
Okay.
Uses the spirit bomb, reshapes the topography of Piccolo's homeworld by Namek, I think it is, by completely destroying it. Somebody's gonna tweet at me that was fucking wrong.
I haven't seen the show. I can't back you up on this one.
Okay, well, the listeners at home love that metaphor. So so in the end, William does manage to strike down the Queen of Blades, which is the difference here. Frieza does win. And the people would recognize him as their king. So they're like, yeah, he got rid of the monarchy. Let's have him as king.
Yeah. it's like their prime ministers right now. They've had like three this year.
Yeah, exactly. So another quote.
Confidence against the magic man.
Yeah, he invented magic, don't you know? Isn't that good enough for the common man?
Oi, he keeps using his power over reality to change the laws.
Does he? I don't remember that.
Cavern in Parliament, just him.
Yeah. So another quote from Tales of Albion. Once he had vanquished the court, the Archon set his mind to unifying Albion into a great kingdom. His powers of will were so great that it seemed the world reshaped itself in accordance with his wishes. Cities were built in a week's time, and marvelous machines were constructed that ran on will alone. Through 1,000 years of peace, Albion reigned as the greatest center of commerce and philosophy the world had ever known. But without an enemy to vanquish, the Archon's children grew petty and cruel. They called themselves heroes and used their powers of will to terrorize the people. A younger Archon might have stopped them, but his battle with the queen and his time in the void had infected his body and mind with a wasting illness. Faced with this decay, William wrapped his body in golden mail and a royal blue cloak before vanishing. Thus began the corruption of the kingdom. But more on that after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the wars that followed the first Archon, William Black's disappearance, is estimated that 75% of people died in Albion, either slain in battle or from disease or starvation. So, not going great for his descendants.
The last thing the king said is, "I will usher in a new era of peace, and everyone I know is dead."
Then he wrapped himself in his best clothes and just like vanished. While his children, who called themselves heroes, that's a capital H heroes, because in the games you play as the hero. In each of the games you play as the hero of different things. I think it's the hero of Oakvale is the first one. It's the hero of Oak something in the first one anyway. And then subsequent games you also play as like this specific hero, I guess.
You're a king in the third one. I know that. Like the morality in that one is like tax law and shit like that. Again, I haven't played it in decades. The second one, I can't remember who you play. You're just, for me, I was just some guy. if I recall, but also you like, it sounds like a hero's college or something, right? That you like always start at?
Yeah, there's always a hero's guild, which you start at. We'll get into the who founds the hero's guild in a little bit. But now we're talking about what comes to be known as the Old Kingdom, and it's kind of run by William Black's children over the years. So his children were not as magnanimous as he was. They ruled with a revolving door policy for years, just bringing like fresh coups and unending tyranny to the subjects.
Okay, I thought you meant it's just like, oh yeah, no, they'll leave the Heroes Guild and all become lobbyists, basically.
No, they all like, there's no Heroes Guild yet, so they all just like they take turns at being ruler, and just like whoever's the most powerful and nastiest kind of takes over.
Are they immortal? Do you know?
Yeah, it seems like generally they're much longer lived. As far as immortal, I it's hard to tell. So like, William Black was infected with something called the corruption, which killed. It's this the wasting illness that the excerpt described him having. And it was afflicting him, but it didn't kill him. He did just kind of like vanish to where he went. We don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But he like maybe he just like I went out back and I died. You know. Maybe
he had like a scratch on his foot and then accidentally got a drop of water from like the Thames River in there, and then he's just like, oh, you know, he has a degenerative disease where he has to like travel multiple dimensions to try and cure his typhoid.
Exactly. So a neat tidbit, I found in the Tales of Albion is that the personal guards to the Archons, essentially like the royal guard, the royal military or whatever, like the protectors of the Archons, which are the people who rule Albion, they get the title of, like, William didn't take the title of king, he took the title of Archon, which is like an ancient Greek title.
Which is also Albion, that's a Greek word, it's what they like called it, if I read the Wikipedia paragraph properly.
There you go. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. So these people, the royal guards, they're encased in armor from birth. So there's no skin to skin with mommy. It's just skin to baby plate mail, essentially.
That's kind of cool. That's like a 40K lore.
Exactly. I thought it was an interesting little bit. I don't know how they choose the baby. Like they got, like you got 10 seconds. Like there's just one guy who's really good at spotting talent. You know, one really good like recruiter who's just like, take that one. Take that one there. Yeah. Him? Yeah. No, cleft lip? I don't think so. Not my royal guard.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to tell he's encased in armor, right? And like, what is it, like a fucking beetle then? Do the children like shed their armor and like,
I don't remember like the royal guard being an enemy or anything in the first one, and like I couldn't find anything about them specifically, the royal guard as like an enemy or anything like that. It does seem to be like the royal guards to the Archons in this old kingdom, so this does just seem to be, near as I could tell in the, you know, the admittedly limited research that we do for the show, does seem to just be like a one-off little bit of lore, you know, that's just like, yeah, these things are just encased in armor from birth. Like, cool.
Very cool. Lore Boys canon. They are treated like beetles. So I guess like the puberty VHS that they watch in school is just like, you'll notice your armor is changing. Or like,
yeah. It's about this time you'll be entering into the pupate stage. Don't be surprised.
For no purpose whatsoever, they have like a cocoon stage. they put like horny teenagers in.
Yeah. dear God, it's me, Margaret the Beetle. So these Archon, you know, secret police or whatever, they enforce harsh rules with unyielding devotion. No citizens out past nightfall. All citizens are expected to muster when told. Opposing the Archon's decrees is a crime punishable by death of you and your family. So like, don't fucking break the law in the Old Kingdom, basically.
There's like some that's a real thing that happened in some real place where it was just like knowing someone who was I think a malcontent would get them and your family killed for some reason.
I think in North Korea, famously, there's like generational punishments where it's like you'll get ordered, like
it's that
sentence, and it'll be like you, your kids, and if your kids have any children, their kids, like three generations will just like spend their lives in prison.
Not a malcontent, a dissident. Sorry, I had the wrong thing there.
Sure, I mean a malcontent. Malcontent is a gateway drug to dissidents, right?
I want that on a t-shirt. That's great. New merch, by the way. New store. It's up. It's faster now.
Yeah, check out the link in this episode because I fixed the last 10 or so. So those should all be good. This is the Old Kingdom. It's generally a bad time for your regular old Dick and Jane just trying to make it as cabbage farmers. But eventually, there's this ruling Archon at the time, one of William's descendants, who orders a massive spire be built. He would use this as a focus for Will, capital W, but not the name Will Black, just willpower, magic. He orders this spire be created, which can focus magic. Just after it's completed, the sky is filled with blinding light and all of Albion shakes. The explosion of the tower leveled the surrounding city and all of its inhabitants, and the Old Kingdom, in an instant, overnight, just lay in ruins. So no one is left alive in the Old Kingdom, in the capital city where it stood anyway. There's just people who lived in like these outlying towns who survived it, and a lot of them didn't survive it either because there was just like earthquakes across the land.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I was just imagining a guy in like his vegetable garden and then like an earthquake, the classic like cartoon crack, like rips the ground asunder, but it's like in his like root garden. So you've got all these potatoes just like falling down into this chasm, like falling straight out of the dirt.
I mean, we'll get to it, but that's going to become a real problem for people pretty soon. So
the earthquakes and the blinding flash of light
and the destruction of food and starvation. As an issue. Before we get there, though, we'll talk a bit about the tower. So I mentioned it earlier. It's a pretty notable location in Fable 2. It is known as the Tattered Spire. It was created so that its ability to focus will in such concentrated doses means someone using it will be essentially granted a wish, like a no limitations wish.
So, oh, yeah, that's the end of Fable 2, because a bad guy shoots your dog and... you're a psychopath if you don't choose the wish to bring your dog back to life at the end, because you get like it's got like the whatever the I don't know if it's a binary choice or like the Mass Effect color coded choice where you have like good bad synthesis or whatever, where you can fuse all life with your dog, I guess would be the end of that. But yeah, obviously I wish for my dog to be brought back to life. I remember that dog was like up there with good video game dogs. And you were talking about how shitty Fallout 4 is. Dogmeat in that game, not a great video game dog. Animated like a wind-up toy, because Bethesda's animations are fucking bad. But the Fable 2 dog, very good. Very good boy.
Yeah. So I mentioned it before. I haven't played Fable 2, but like you mentioned him having a time machine. This is what I was saying. Like, oh, maybe it was this that you were thinking of, that he had this access to the spire, but it's also possible he had it.
The climax is in the spire. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew it was in the game, and I knew it was an important location in the game. So I know what you're thinking. Like, hey, you can wish for your dog to come back. What did this fucking guy wish for? Right? That blew up everything.
Hey, so, it probably wasn't. Hey, I wish the sun would explode. Yeah, I can't imagine that was it. I wish France would explode. Fine. But the finger on the monkey's paw curls down. But yeah. The explosion was so huge it destroyed the shires of England, of course. That'd be the ironic punishment.
Some people think that the Archon's last wish was the destruction of the Old Kingdom, a noble wish to end the corrupt kingdom so that a new, pure one could be made in its place. The fly in the ointment here is that it was the Archons who fucking made it that way. Killing a whole bunch of innocents in an explosion of your own hubris is not a great foundation for a fair and thriving society. And if that's what he had actually wanted, he could have just like, I don't know, policy change, like start there and then go to like wishing it all to dust. It turns out that was a lie. We know canon that it is a lie from the game Fable: The Journey. Which I saw this when I was looking up Fable. I saw this cover art and I thought it was like a knockoff game. Well, I was like, oh,
they've never heard of this.
They must not have been able to copyright the word Fable for their like games. So like just calling it Fable the Journey, like Magic the Gathering, must have been a way around that. But no, it's a canon game. It is exclusively for the Microsoft Kinect.
That's why I don't know what you're talking about. This looks terrible.
I mean, it is a Microsoft Kinect, no controller needed experience. Okay, so that tells you all you should need to know about it. But it is a canon Fable game. So in that, we learn that In focusing all that willpower, the Spire had opened a fissure between Albion and the Void, where the corruption, that terrible force which would infect William Black, lived.
French, yeah.
The corruption, so that the just, I guess, the genesis of being French is what's seeping out. it's seeping into Albion. And three powerful heroes join forces to stop it, which causes the explosion and destruction of the Old Kingdom. So, like, he had created this...
good healthcare and proper taxation and, like, good strong unions cause England to sink into the ocean. Like, what's going on?
Exactly.
No, I don't know anything about the politics of France now, but I've always thought of it as more liberal than England, right?
Yeah, I don't know anything about the politics of France now either, really.
Yeah. I know they like to strike, and that's... generally a good thing, because there's like that kind of like power for the workers, right? So
yeah. So yeah, I mean, the point here is that it wasn't a noble wish by the king. It was these three heroes who realized there was a problem, went to stop it, and caused an explosion to shut the rift, essentially, which ended up destroying the Old Kingdom. So it's actually the heroes' fault. After the fall of the Old Kingdom, there's this period of isolation. Small communities just taking care of themselves, not worrying about installing egomaniacs to rule over everyone and make decisions for people so out of touch with themselves that they couldn't imagine a day in their shoes. Nothing like that. Just stiff people.
Yeah.
Getting back
it's
to
Ethan
small...
going off about the fucking class divide again.
Just... hey, they wrote about it, man. This is not me. This is not me. That was actually a quote from the Tales of Albion. No, obviously not. No, it's definitely not all roses and sunshine. This is not painted as like a nice time. This tribalism just leads to more wars spurred on by what we mentioned before, a lack of food, livestock, fresh water, all this stuff that got impacted by these like massive earthquakes, this massive explosion, all this other stuff. So survivors in these days would often pour over the Old Kingdom in search of relics they could trade for necessities, though eventually the forests of Albion slowly reclaim like the Old Kingdom, which I call the Old Kingdom. It's really like a big city that we're kind of referring to here, and I assume it's a location in one or two of the games where you can like visit the Old Kingdom, or like it's like the ruins area.
You're king in the third one. Maybe they rebuilt like that because it sank into the swamp, and then that one sank into the swamp. Like maybe they just rebuilt on top of the Old Kingdom.
Yeah, maybe. Like the guy who keeps building castles in Monty Python.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, 4 centuries prior to the events of the original fable, there was a trader who uncovered 2 sites where will energy seemed to be particularly strong. Okay?
Okay.
One site seemed to heal people who visited it, while the other inflicted pain and granted visions of bloodshed. The trader... like any good entrepreneur, decided he would open opposing temples and charge tithes
trader,
to both.
Oh, trader, excuse me. I thought the traitor is
oh,
what
no,
you
no,
were
a
saying.
Trader. Like yeah, a, okay. Like a merchant. Okay, yeah. So the merchant decides he's going to open opposing temples and charge tithes to both. Eventually, people begin to think of Avo and Skorm as real deities, though in the Lost Chapters, the Oracle of Snowspire proclaims them to be nothing but false idols. So remember how before I said, like, it's definitely not from the gods that magic comes from, because some guy just made up both gods one day and was just like, yeah, I can get you into heaven, no problem. Just give me a farthing, you know?
He's sure, like the OG QAnon, right? He's just like a 4chan shit poster, and then 2.5 years later, you've got people breaking into the Capitol building, right?
Exactly. So these are probably churches are probably in Fable 2 and 3. They're definitely in Fable 1. The Church of Skorm is in a swamp. I don't remember where the Church of Avo is. But you basically, like, if you're going for the max evil build or the max good build, you go to like the other temple and you just kill acolytes. Like you farm them for like evil, because you gain like a ton of extra evil points or good points depending on who you're killing.
You can farm priests for rep XP, basically.
Well, and once you get max rep XP and you go to like the appropriate church, then they'll give you like a special weapon. I think you get like a special sword for Skorm. I don't remember what you get for Avo. This is the period of my life where I was very into playing the evil side of video game characters, and I can't stomach it anymore. I get too like, oh.
I guess the thing that I spent the most time on that had any kind of rep score was Mass Effect, and I was always Paragon, except I would always punch the journalist because it's fucking hilarious.
Because you got it. They're a piece of shit. Yeah. So this time in our history is known as the Fallow Wars. The population dwindled to the brink of extinction as petty squabbles continued to take lives and no foothold for civilization could take hold. That is until a man named Nostro arrives from the east. So this guy Nostro, once upon a time, had been but a simple bandit. He was driven by an ambition to make a name for himself and leave his mark on the world. He came to Albion, hoping that the anarchy here would allow him to do just that and kind of make something of himself more than, I don't want to be a bandit. No son of mine is going to be a king.
I mean, it's easy to steal from people if they're constantly at war, right?
Yeah. So despite being a bandit, he had a pretty good moral compass, but he would only meet his full potential when he met a man named Scythe. Like what one would use to harvest a field before letting it lie fallow. So Nostro and Scythe, I just put that together. I don't know if that was intentional or just completely arbitrary, but anyway, Nostro and Scythe are...
A bunch of agricultural puns, just like in the world for some reason.
Exactly. So, and then like Nostro, right? Then we just get like Nostro. Yeah. Did you Nostro your turnips today? So Nostro and Scythe are both present in the original fable, though Scythe seems to be considerably more alive than Nostro. So I have another excerpt for you here. Scythe was a wraith of a man, wizened and stern. He carried an ornate sword and shrouded himself in a tattered blue cloak that had tarnished golden armor. He seemingly appeared out of nowhere and took a profound interest in Nostro. Scythe saw in Nostro something more than a mere bandit. He sensed that Nostro unknowingly possessed the power that all the Archon's descendants shared. Scythe hatched a plan. If he could properly guide Nostro, this bandit could achieve great things. He might even unite Albion and undo the damage done by the first Archon and his children. And so Scythe began to teach Nostro how to be a leader of men. And Peter, I figure you caught the thing there.
Yeah, he's obviously Will, and also like Paul Atreides from Dune, because I think that happens too, right?
Paul Atreides...
The main guy, right?
He does go into hiding, yeah.
Yeah, and doesn't he come back as like this mysterious god emperor or something? I haven't read it. I just had the entire thing broken down for me. Yeah,
he does, yeah. I guess because you follow him through the story, so it's like, it's never like a surprise to you that Paul Atreides like is suddenly back, because you go off with him with the jihadists and, you know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So yeah, it's never confirmed anywhere, but like, the leading theory is that Scythe is William Black. And for the listeners at home who may not have caught it, it's the tattered blue cloak hiding tarnished golden armor, because that's what William disappeared in, essentially. And you can meet Scythe in Fable of the Lost Chapters. He's a character. He's a bit of a ghoulish person, but he's still alive, still kicking. Does say ornate sword. He may have had the Sword of Aeons at this point in history, but he does not have it when you meet him in game, because you get the Sword of Aeons at the end of Fable 1. Or you can. If you go the evil route, you get the Sword of Aeons. Basically, you're like trying to find your sister the entire game.
Teresa, I think is her
name. Teresa,
right?
Yeah. She's like a mystic. You end up finding her at the end of the game, but Jack of Blades kind of has her and says, like, if you kill your sister, or I think it's the sword itself, is like, if you kill your sister, you can keep me, but if you're not willing to, then you don't. So the good ending is you free your sister, and the bad ending is you kill your sister and you get the best sword in the game.
Yeah.
So,
and if you want to min-max, you don't want to use your sister as a weapon. She's not nearly as good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just, she's pretty good. It's just like blunt damage. There's not a lot of enemies that have vulnerabilities to it. Whereas slashing damage, there's a lot more enemies that are vulnerable.
Swinging your sister is very good against skeletons.
Yeah, exactly. They definitely take bonus damage from swinging your sister. So following Scythe's instructions, Nostro gets to work making Albion great again. First, he gathers powerful men and women from across the land and founds a guild where they could train to become heroes. At the same time, Scythe was training Nostro in the ways of Will. So he founds the Heroes Guild. He's like the guy who started it all. Scythe is training Nostro in the ways of the Will, but we still kind of have this like tribalism, like all the villages just kind of like fending for themselves throughout Albion. So Nostro, you know, does what any good unifier would do, gathers an army, delivers peace by force, and
okay, cool.
conquers Albion. Right.
Yeah, because obviously the British could never figure out trade, right? That'd be ridiculous.
just general diplomacy, yeah. So with the Heroes Guild shaping up nicely, Nostro also commissioned the Witchwood Arena as a way for anyone to settle disputes in public. That is, in the first game, it's like the arena, like you have to beat it to progress. And that's like, I think the first time you see Jack of Blades is he like, when you finally beat the arena for like the last fight, he like shows up in the audience and is just watching you fight essentially.
Isn't it like a giant guy at the end of that? You have to fight like a big bruiser dude. I think I've watched people do that fight.
It's a classic like arena from any video game, like the same as the arena in Oblivion. I think it's just like it's all back to back. You don't necessarily like, you don't go do other quests. You don't go explore an Elven Ruin in between fights. I think you just have to beat them all back to back, essentially.
Well, yeah, because the arena in Oblivion, you've got whatever the vampire orc, right? The pale kid or whatever his name is.
Pale orc. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
In Fable, it's like the infinite EXP grind, the arena, because you basically you beat all the enemies until the last one, and then you die, and if I recall correctly, you don't lose as much experience as you gained, so you can just you can just keep doing that and keep getting experience, and then I don't think you get gold, but I think you can infinite experience, or maybe I'm remembering that backwards. Maybe you can get infinite gold but not experience. There's something like that.
We're just trying to dredge up memories from 2002 right now.
It's been 16 years since I played the game. Cut me some slack. It's been most of my life since I played the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm closer to dying than I am to the last time I played Fable.
Like much, much closer. So he creates the Witchwood Arena. Just a little lore drop for people who want it. He also had a sword created based on legends of the Sword of Aeons, which makes me think that Scythe at this point does not have the Sword of Aeons. I didn't follow what, maybe it's known what happened to the Sword of Aeons, but I didn't look into it too much. But the fact that his pupil is like, well, I'm gonna make a sword based on the Sword of Aeons. And William Black's like, oh, you all, is you? Hmm? Well, I don't know nothing about that. Hmm?
No, I'm gonna do it. I don't remember what it looked like.
Yeah, so he calls it the
him
Tears
too
of...
is a big fat British guy. He just sounds like that.
Yeah. He calls his sword
he
the
loves
Tears
Batman.
Of... Yeah, exactly. He's like, he's got little pointy ears and a mask that he wears. He's a vigilante at night. You said this was a sword, didn't you?
Is the cowl like over the cross guard? Is that what it just like hangs over?
Yeah. it's like the hilt guard is a like a utility belt. It's got like a grappling hook and like shark repellent.
Anti-shark spray. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Jinx.
The only Batman Peter and I know, the one from fucking 1968 or whatever. he has this sword commissioned based on the Sword of Aeons, which just like his historical like retellings of what the Sword of Aeons might have looked like. He calls this
it's like an OC do not steal sword, basically.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's from his favorite myth.
It's a slash fic, yeah. It's a slash
oh,
fic.
Ah, hey, there's a good one.
He calls it the Tears of Avo, or the Tears of Avo, which is in Fable the Lost Chapters. So if you beat Fable 1 and you get to the you do the good ending and you spare Teresa, you don't get the Sword of Aeons. If you get the DLC, you can get this sword called the Tears of Avo if you complete this quest line after sparing your sister, which is like an equivalently just good sword that's not the Sword of Aeons, basically.
Did Fable come packaged with the crystal Xbox, the white one?
I don't know.
Plastic one?
I didn't have a transparent plastic Xbox, so I don't know. There was a like Fable Platinum collection at some point, but I had the big black brick. That was my Xbox.
Right, yeah.
So despite Scythe's teaching, Nostro was falling under the sway of a real gamer moment. He's being seduced by a woman named Magdalena, this courtesan. The arena becomes nothing more than a blood sport arena, where it was once supposed to be like, it's court, I don't know, take it seriously. Now it's just like a straight up arena, which it is that whenever you get there. The Heroes Guild is flooded by ruthless mercenaries just looking to become stronger bullies, essentially, and they're kind of just like welcomed with open arms. war breaks out.
No background checks at the fucking hero, no, at the hero, yeah, academy.
I'm telling you, you don't get a gun until you tell me your name.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just the cops, right? Like, yeah. Just fucking anybody. So you got a high school diploma, it's like, but actually he just like stole it from somebody he murdered on the way.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, give me that point, Dexter. Oh, it's my diploma. I worked hard on that.
And then you get the little square hat. You have to steal the hat with the tassel on it, exactly, and his diploma.
Yeah. Hey, keep the tassel.
Can you imagine being accosted by brigands and all they take is your graduation robe and your diploma?
Oh, my robe!
Yeah, and it's like, obviously, because the kid's graduating is 17, this thief who's like 35 with scars all over him, is just like, could barely fit into it.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that? Degree in astrophysics? Don't mind if I do. Women studies, that's an easy pick, yeah. I think I'll have me a bit of botany tonight.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of like, because obviously the art majors are the easiest guys to beat up.
Yeah,
like,
take art major and science major.
Snap the easel on your knee.
Yeah, art major and science majors for sure the easiest to bully.
Yeah.
So war breaks out on Nostro's watch. This is a holy war between the churches of Evo and Skorm. While the outcome is unknown, both churches are still around in the games, so I guess they just settled. Eventually, Nostro had isolated himself too far from the people who were once close to him, so the people that he once trusted. Scythe, seeing his old student being corrupted by the new power he wielded, leaves Nostro's side. He's like, okay, you're not listening to me anymore. You have Bloodsport arenas in the land, and you have this Heroes Guild, which is just completely corrupt. In the games,
this is the
too.
Second fucking time he's done this, though. He abandoned his kids when they got corrupted by the will.
Now he's abandoning his great, great, great grandkid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All will users have his blood in him, so he's just like, I don't know. Parenting's hard. I think I quit, honestly.
I'll try and be a dad in a couple other generations and see what happens there.
Exactly. Which he kind of does. Like, again, when you play the Lost Chapters, you do meet him and he does give you some guidance. So, and you are, again, technically his progeny to some generation, right? But he sees this kind of happening and it's like, oh yeah, you know, the problem is you're not listening to the people you can really trust, like me. So I'm going to leave. Okay. Because I'm not going to try and get through to you. Instead, I'm just going to go. This is...
Yeah, you had your chance to listen to me, and this is the last conversation we're having about you not listening to me, and now you'll never get any more advice from me ever again.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
So it's poison slipped into his food, which would eventually kill Nostro. Easily administered, as there was no one left to trust in his home. His followers and even his wife had long since abandoned him. And on his deathbed, Nostro calls out for Scythe. So his old friend acquiesces after all this time, sits vigil with the dying king, doing his best to comfort him. By the dawn, Nostro had died, and he would be buried in Lichfield Graveyard, where his spirit would linger, discontent with his ignoble death and legacy. And Peter, for you, this is, again, podcast listeners at home are yelling at their listening device. This is a quest in the first game. To get through Lichfield Graveyard, you have to go on a, like, fetch quest for Nostro to retrieve like his helm and his armor and his leggings and his boots, and you have to place them all back in his grave, and then he'll let you get through the graveyard. Essentially,
you have to fight him. Is he a spooky boss?
I don't recall fighting him. No, I think you just have to retrieve his stuff for him, because he's not a bad guy. I think especially after death, he's unhappy that his legacy kind of ended the way that it did, and he wasn't like a better ruler in the end. Many years after his death and after the founding of the Heroes Guild by Nostro, a famous heroine known as Scarlet Robe would get married to a humble woodsman who once nursed her back to health. The couple would have two children, first a daughter named Teresa, then a son known as the Hero of Oakvale. And that's and that's
Teresa,
the start of the
protagonist.
Yeah, that's the first Fable game, or the start of, anyway. So that's the prehistory of Fable. It's not everything. I could probably do another Fable episode if people are still thirsty for it. Like I said, I didn't touch Demon Doors. I didn't touch a lot of like the world building stuff in the Fable games, which is pretty cool. What's a hub? Why is he such a cute little fat guy, huh? Who's these cute little fat goblins that we got?
It's a Balverine.
What is a Balverine? Why did seven of them attack Scarlet Robe? You know, if you guys want to hear that, send us an email, contact@loreboys.com or loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. Get on the Discord. There are links in the description of this episode. as my wife fetches a cat off of the Christmas tree behind me. We also have new merch on the store. We have an easier merch store again. It's Teespring. We're back on now, right?
Teepublic.
We're back on Teepublic. Yeah. So check it out. If you guys have designs from some of Pete's original artwork that you guys want to see printed on a mug or a poster or a hat, let us know. A good way to do that is by email or by Discord, and it's super simple for Pete to just upload them.
If you want to pitch ideas too, not to talk shit, we did have a merch provider for a while where the upload process took longer than the actual drawing of the image, which is why the merch stopped being updated after the first time I did it. Because it was literally impossible. But now, if you have ideas of some goofy thing that you want to see on a shirt or a mask or a hat or whatever, just let us know in the Discord or via email. I know we've had a couple. There's like the steak and cheese sandwich I saw is still there, and like all these other like bizarre things. And our most recent, I did launch the store with one new item, which is the biblically accurate goth girlfriend, which was an Ethan goof that wasn't on air, but I thought was hilarious. So that's available now.
Is that not on air? Wow. Okay.
No, I don't think it was on air. I remember being disappointed that it was just you and I talking shit, and it's like, fuck, no one's ever going to hear that.
You, me, and Jamie just goofing, and I bust out the biblically accurate goth, big titty goth girlfriend. And
well, yeah, you were just like this interlocking wheel of thighs, and I was like, be not aroused. So that's the shirt now. Like, that's it.
So that shirt's available in the store. There's a link in the description below. Check it out if you guys are interested. Pete has been working on some comic stuff, I know. There's always Instagram stuff going on. What's going on in the world of Pete these days?
Yeah, Lorebars Podcast on Instagram. I have been doing a lot of comic work now that a couple of the things that were kind of weighing on me are all taken care of at this point, so I've been making a lot of progress there. Still shooting to finish the line work for March with a soft target of Montreal Comic Con, which is kind of when we want to launch it, but of course that's kind of fluid there. We'll see what happens. And then the other thing is, yeah, merch is up and is easy again. So if you have an idea or you want to see something, I have like 90% of the Photoshop files. So if it's something you like, it's probably available, unless got a Nintendo reference in it, because they nuked our most popular product and that's never coming back. Fuckers. But we did sell some of them. I think a few people have like the sticker on their PCs or whatever. Like some people have like the sticker of the shirt. So like there's a few people there with like straight up Nintendo contraband out in the wild. Yeah, it's crazy.
Exactly. Which you should be proud of, honestly. Best way to get in touch with, like I was saying before, is the Discord. There's a link in the description below that should take you right to the server. If you guys want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you'll get access to loser titles. You'll get access sometimes to Pete's art ideas. You'll get access to this script sometimes. You'll get access to the bonus content every single week released on Thursdays. So check that out, patreon.com/theloreboys. We have a couple different tiers there with different perks for each one. And finally, if you guys don't trust Loreboys Prime, we do, of course, have... Loreboys Prime, even though you don't trust it, because I just asked you if you trust it, then we do have Patreon, of course. No, we do have Loreboys Prime, where Pete and I, I first noticed this amazing quality of the land around me. It seems to have this like amazing healing property, which everyone who seems to visit, you know, my plot of land seems to be healed in some way, seems to feel really good. And Pete has, I don't know, he's got some stupid bullshit piece of land that he thinks has some kind of property.
It turns
too.
Everybody makes everybody French. It's fucked up.
So, I don't think you should, I think you should come be healed, not go be French, because that's the opposite of healing.
I'm just saying bilingual would be pretty sick. Or if you already speak Spanish or some other thing, some third language. You can also speak English, French, and Spanish are the three genders, right? Like, that's it.
some a hypothetical fantasy third language.
Yeah. Okay. Like, Italian. You can come and I think you should come and be French and wear a little beret and complain about the strike.
I think you guys should come get healed. Now, there is the occasional pretty intense hallucinations of bloodlust and carnage, but I mean, we'll heal you right after, so we'll kind of heal the mental scars from that, you know. So just bring your tithes down to my place, and we'll heal you up, or go to Pete's place.
Bring my tithes down to my place. I'll teach you how to speak French.
Yeah, and I can heal you after your French.
And I have affairs.
Like, that would cost you a Loreboys.
Loreboys.
Out.
Salt sea.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.